Good morning. Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams. The number of applications to New Mexico's medical cannabis program is growing and fast. With so many people signing up as medical marijuana patients, the Department of Health's processing of applications has slowed to a crawl, and it's put it on the wrong side of the state law, which says applications have to be turned around in 30 days. What's behind the surge in new patients? Is New Mexico's medical marijuana program working for them? And if not, how should we fix it? Joining us to talk about this are Joel White, medical marijuana patient and advocate, also former president of the New Mexico Medical Cannabis Patient Alliance, Eric Briones with us, who runs Minerva Canna Group in Albuquerque, and David Valdez, CEO of New Mexico Brief Relief, a medical marijuana consulting group in Albuquerque. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you for being with us.
Joel, let's start with you. Tell us your story. What has your experience been with medical marijuana and the state's program?
Well, I had no experience whatsoever as a child or as an adult. I first tried it very reluctantly. I had not even consumed alcohol until I was 40. When I was 44, I was given some to try because I have multiple sclerosis. I've been diagnosed since 1989. I was very reluctant to try it, so I hid it in the back of my closet because I thought the feds were going to just nail me and I was going to be thrown in prison. Covered it up with clothes, and then I started doing research on it over about a year. I did a lot of research looking only at .edu, .gov, .org sites, right, not any .com sites, and realized that most of what I had learned as a child and as a young adult was not true. I eventually tried it and found out that it was very beneficial for my quality of life and has helped me be a productive taxpaying citizen in the state of New Mexico. And once I realized that, I wanted to advocate for other people that needed to know that this was a true alternative to other more serious, dangerous drugs, pharmaceutical drugs that I tried. And so I've been an advocate since then.
So were you taking pharmaceutical drugs for your condition beforehand? What's the difference for somebody that, you know, that needs medication to take this versus,
Well, that's a huge question that's really not something we can answer, you know, right here. But
right. Well, for you personally?
For me, the drugs that had been suggested to me by my neurologist and primary care doctors were drugs that were very expensive, and they had dangerous side effects. My neurologist had said, why don't you try Copaxone for a couple of years, and let's see what happens and see how your body responds to that. Well, I researched Copaxone. It cost about $3,000 a month. The most beneficial effect I could have with that, according to my neurologist, was I could avoid maybe one exacerbation every 18 to 24 months. However, with that drug, it's an injection drug. You have to give yourself a shot every single day of the rest of your life in seven different places on your body, and it stings kind of like a bee, and you might have some benefit. So you might have, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of benefit, but you're going to have 24 months of misery basically every year. Or you're going to have 365 days of misery every year because you have to give yourself a bee sting. So I didn't want to do that. I tried medical cannabis. I started with the program in 2010. I have not had an exacerbation since that time, knocking on wood, because it's provided a huge improvement in my quality of life. I have better earning potential. I pay a lot of taxes to the state of New Mexico because I'm a productive citizen, and the cost is very modest compared to what the pharmaceutical drugs would have been.
And you're running your own business now, right?
But I'm a commercial real estate broker and developer. I do a lot of different work in the real estate field. I also was a consultant prior to that as a commercial real estate appraiser because I wanted to have a job at that time that I could do as an MS patient, even if I had difficulty with walking and if I lost ambulatory control. I wanted to have something I could do with my mind, even if my legs didn't cooperate. But my legs cooperate now, and I do typically do 100 push-ups a day. I do 50 squat presses with 12-pound dumbbells. I take 10 to 30-mile bike rides, and it's something I could never have done 6 years, 7 years ago.
Right. Well, you're looking very healthy, so I'm glad to hear that that things are better for you with this
Much
program.
Better.
Guys, Joel is one of how many patients that we have in the state of New Mexico that use medical cannabis for conditions like this?
25,000 is the latest number.
Yeah, the latest number is about 25,000.
Okay. Can we take a step back here, Eric and David? You guys are on the business side of this, and talk a little bit about this program, the medical cannabis program in New Mexico. How is it set up? How does it work for those of us that might not be familiar with it?
Well, first of all, if you want to be enrolled in the program, you have to be a patient with one of 17 qualifying conditions. Recently, the state, the DOH, changed the rules and regs that you only needed one doctor signature on the application, whereas some conditions you needed two signatures, which was cumbersome and expensive for patients trying to get into the program. So the way it works is you have a condition, one of the 17 qualifying conditions. You go to a doctor or somebody who's qualified to review your charts and sign off on the form that then is submitted to the DOH. That form is reviewed by the Department of Health's Medical Review Board, and if they've deemed that your application is worthy, they'll send you a card. It's the enrollment card. It's got your name on it and your patient ID number. Once you have that card, then you can go visit any dispensary in the state and purchase the medicine that you want.
And I understand that every year you have to go back and renew and prove once again that the condition that you signed up for is still a condition you have. Is that right? Is that something you do?
Yeah, that's something I have to do every year. And it's one of the misnomers, too, is that through the program you have to get a prescription for a doctor. This is not a prescription from a doctor. All this is a set of forms that you have to fill out and that also provide access to your medical records through to the Department of Health. But it's basically the doctor saying, I believe that the patient would benefit from this type of treatment. And so it's allowing the patient to say, I want to try something different than opioid drugs, for instance, which, you know, cannabis is much safer than opioids, which are the thing that kill most people that overdose on drugs. One of the issues that's been frustrating for patients is that most of these diseases or illnesses that are the 17 qualifying conditions are chronic conditions. They're incurable chronic conditions. So I have multiple sclerosis. Every single year I have to prove that I still have multiple sclerosis, and I still have to prove that this is an incurable disease, debilitating disease.
You have to...
Every year I have to prove the same thing that's
already
true.
Even if you have a disease like multiple sclerosis that, like, you always have, I mean, you still have to go back and prove it? I mean,
yes.
Even if it's chronic and medical definition,
if you have multiple sclerosis, it's chronic and it's incurable.
Well, a doctor has to sign you up every year.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to go like to your neurologist and get documentation every single year saying, yes, he still has this condition, but you do have to have a doctor sign you up every year saying that you do have this condition. It doesn't have to be your neurologist who originally diagnosed you, but the person, the doctor and or the doctor that signed you up for the medical cannabis program. You do have to go every year and say, yes, he still has this condition, and yes, the program is still beneficial for him, and the benefits outweigh the risks.
And it's one of the things that we would, you know, patients, we've talked about this for years, that, you know, we need to change this, and it would help the Department of Health, because then they wouldn't have to deal with the backload of all the renewals plus the new patients coming in, especially the patients that are, you know, have diseases that are chronic and incurable. However, the dilemma comes out because the way the statute is written, it is written in the statute that it has to be renewed annually.
Well, I believe all the cannabis programs are like that.
Right.
Every state.
Right. And so that's a dilemma because the law says it has to happen, even though it's silly that it has to happen.
It's really to satisfy the federal government is what it's for. It's not really, for the state reasons, because the state allows it. It's basically so the federal government, I think, doesn't, you know, look frowningly upon it, that we're just giving out cards and not checking up on these patients that they're giving cards to on some kind of base, yearly or bi-yearly or something basis. So they figure a year is kind of like the standard now that everybody's using as to for, you know, I guess you could kind of call it a refill,
right.
But you don't get it refilled.
And we right have here petitioned the state as producers and as patients and their annual or biannual meetings that they have to allow chronic conditions to not have to go through this process every year, to be allowed that if you do have MS or you have some of these chronic conditions that are you're going to have them the rest of your life, why do you need to requalify? And as Joel was saying, it goes back to the law and to the way it was written around this program, and they have to abide by the law, unfortunately. And in order to change that, they would have to open up the act as a legislative session.
Well, I want to get back into that in a second. But first, let's talk a little bit about this big growth that's been happening recently in patients wanting to sign up for medical marijuana. I mean, the numbers are pretty impressive. I think it's 12,000 this year. Is that right? In the past year?
It's about $1,000 a month.
Yeah. $1,000 a month, which 12,000 over a year. You said 25,000 are enrolled now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's almost half of the entire...
Well, now you've got to also understand that as the number is a kind of a two rung up a ladder and one rung down, because you lose some people every year
mm-hmm.
and every month. You gain a lot of people and you lose a lot of people.
I see.
And you lose them for a variety of reasons. Some of the patients just find it easier to buy their medicine on the streets and they don't need the program. Some patients, of course, pass away. But there's a variety of reasons that patients drop out of this program.
What do you think's behind the surge in new applications, though? I mean, any of you can take that question, because that's the reason that the health department says they haven't been able to keep up, is because there's been so many new applications. Why?
Well, they've made it easier.
Yeah, they've dropped some of the hurdles that have been in place, especially over the first few, say, 3 to 4 years. However, there are when we did some studies as a patient organization. We looked at other markets. We looked at Colorado's medical program. We looked at Arizona's medical program and, you know, surrounding adjacent states. And if you look at the populations of those states relative to this population in New Mexico and the patient participation with the qualifying conditions that are in place, we estimated that there were, and this is going back maybe 2 years ago, we estimated that there would probably be about 40,000 patients in the state of New Mexico if we were at rough parity with patient ratios in Colorado and Arizona. So it's not a surprise that we're at about 25,000 right now. I think we're doing some catch up from what was the slow play that was going on early on. However, you know, I think there are some corrective measures that would be relatively easy for the Department of Health to do to resolve the issue, and that would be hire some more people to deal with this.
I believe they did.
Right. And we're going to get into that in just a second.
And I believe another reason why we're getting so many inflow I see in the office is the knowledge is getting out there. People are learning, and they're seeing that it – because I'm seeing now we're getting a lot more soccer moms, I like to say, people that have never tried medical cannabis in their life before at all. Like, not even in their younger years, like Joel had.
I never did.
Same thing.
Right.
And I'm seeing a lot more now in the office come through, and they're like, yeah, I know so-and-so, and they're doing great. They've been on the program for years, and I've never seen them look as nice as they're looking. So we're getting a lot more of them people in, so I'm believing that the information is getting out there, the knowledge is getting out there, and people are now realizing this is a viable medication and it does work.
Right.
It's not just for stoners.
And there is a stigma that has to be overcome. And I went through that process because, you know, I had a stigma about this.
Yes.
10 years ago, I would have never thought that I would be in this program and using this kind of medical treatment for my conditions. However, once I learned more about it, I became more educated. I realized that this was very effective and safer than a lot of other alternatives. So that has happened. Professionals that I work with day to day, I'm honest about me being in the program and what it has done for me as a patient. And they know that I'm still a successful business person. I still function well. I have a high quality of life. And so they think, well, maybe this is something I should consider for whatever ailment or problem that they're dealing with.
Right. But I want to, you know, emphasize that I think the single most important reason that they're seeing this surge of patient applicants is the removal of the two doctor signature, because they've made it easier to get into the program with just requiring one signature. That has a monetary value, because every signature of a doctor is anywhere from $125 to $300. So if you needed two of those, your expense is doubled. And so with the removal of that one signature, it becomes a lot more affordable to get into this program. And I think that is one of the biggest single causes, along with the awareness of the benefit of cannabis. But that removal of that signature made a huge surgence of applicants.
Right, taking away one, you know, bureaucratic hurdle can really go a long ways in this case.
And saving $150 to $300
because there are a significant percentage of the patients that are on a lower income level, lower socioeconomic level, right. and they're very sensitive to these things, and it can be problematic. And it also is a problem when you have delays in getting their medicine, because then, you know, they don't have resources, they don't have access to what they need to deal with their problems.
Well, what questions do you have about medical marijuana in New Mexico? And has the system worked for you? Call us now and let us know. It's 277-5866, and our toll-free number is 877-899-5866. You can also send us an email at collinshow@kunm.org, or you can post comments to our webpage at kunm.org. We're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be back to take some calls.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from New Mexico Jazz Workshop, presenting Salsa Under the Stars this Friday, June 24th, 7 p.m., featuring Son Como Son, Salsa Lesson with Carlota for those arriving at 6:30. Tickets at the door or holdmyticket.com.
Should the Mexican gray wolf be reintroduced into the Gila National Forest? New Mexico's Department of Game and Fish continues to say no. 40 years ago, the lobo was first listed as an endangered species, but despite numerous lawsuits by environmental groups, it's still endangered. On the next New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas, author and conservationist Michael Robinson sits down with host Stephen Spitz to explain what's at stake in the most recent litigation. This Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
This is 89.9 KUNM, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico, and we're back talking about the state's medical cannabis program, some of the hurdles it's faced, and the consequences for patients and producers of medical marijuana. Have you or someone you know used marijuana to treat an illness, and what's it been like for you to get a prescription? You can call us at 277-5866 in Albuquerque. Toll-free number is 877-899-5866, or you can join the conversation on Twitter, where we're live tweeting the program. Our handle there is at KUNM News, and our hashtag is HealthNM. Let's go to a call right now. Sherry is on the phone with us from Taos. And hi, Sherry. Thanks for joining us. I understand you're a producer.
I'm a caregiver.
Caregiver.
I'm a licensed caregiver through the program.
And what does a caregiver do? We have lots of different moving parts of this program. A caregiver is someone who grows plants and provides them to a specific patient. Eric's shaking his head.
Well, a caregiver is actually a person that can go in as a surrogate. I have a power of attorney for my partner, and that enables me to apply for a caregiver's license, which means I can go in and I can get his cannabis for him when he's unable to go to the dispensary and get his own cannabis.
I see. And have you been renewing the card, the program for your patient? What's your experience been like there?
Yes, and let me just give you a little bit of background and say that I'm really grateful that there's a medicinal cannabis program in New Mexico, because it's really it is a superior treatment for so many things. My client has Huntington's disease, which is a rare genetic neurodegenerative disease which causes the brain to deteriorate. His doctor in Florida, who's a specialist in Huntington's, recommends using cannabis over many of the pharmaceuticals, says it works better. He also is HIV positive and is a full-blown AIDS survivor. So there's a lot of he has a lot of different aspects that the cannabis really focuses on. He's been in the program for several years, probably one of the first people that applied. And this year was the first time that he had a real problem. The cannabis helps him tremendously, and he went to apply in February, the end of February, because his card expires the first week in April. And when he didn't receive his card, normally it would be 3 weeks. So at 5 weeks, he called. At 6 weeks, I called. At 7 weeks, his health care providers called, which is Southwest Care in Santa Fe. And at Southwest Care, the dispensary here recommended, because we hadn't gotten the card, to have his health care providers call and speak to them and say how urgent it was to get his card. And they were denied accessibility when on the application it says that he signed off saying that the Department of Health can contact his providers and that there is an implied reciprocity there, but they denied his health care people, providers, access to talking about how his condition has deteriorated. And I know I called the Department of Health and I pleaded with them to get him his card because of the severe deterioration that he was undergoing.
Right. How's he doing now?
He, you know, with Huntington's, when the brain starts deteriorating, it's very hard, it's very difficult for it to recover again when it starts declining. If you can keep it on a plateau, which is what the cannabis does, it keeps the brain on a plateau so you don't have those declines, those downward declines. And, you know, I'm not a medical doctor, but I can say after years of knowing this person, I can see when he has a decline, I can see when he has a plateau. And people, not just him, are suffering because they can't get their cards in time. And they go for weeks and months without having their medication. And it's inhuman to make people suffer in this way.
Well, thank you very much, Jerry, for sharing that story with us. And we're going to go to another call now in Santa Fe. Nat is a cannabis patient and has had a similar experience as Sherry. Is that right, Nat?
I live in Santa Fe. I've been here 23 years, and 32 years ago, I was in a motor vehicle accident, or MVA, and experienced a traumatic brain injury. I have unremitting chronic pain and nausea, PTSD, depression, and mild panic attacks as a result of that. Some of those conditions are approved on the medical cannabis program in New Mexico, and some of them are not. So many times you don't have the qualifying condition, as they call it, qualifying condition that you can apply under. But my goals were to live well with a disability and avoid the traps that traditional chemical pharmaceutical treatments can cause. And in the past, I had to take as many as 27 different medications on a daily basis to cope with the challenges that I had. And that kind of chemical assault causes so many consequences, including development of secondary symptoms. You take one medication to treat one symptom, another treats another, while another medication gets added to that mix to combat medication side effects. And the snowball effect frequently happens to people with multiple severe and chronic illnesses. Especially with narcotics that are prescribed, a tolerance builds quickly while you're simply seeking relief from your pain. And the complexity of treatment gets magnified beyond proportions that most people really comprehend. So the innocent desire to live without pain causes an undesired consequence of addiction in many cases, which in turn creates nightmares for patients, family, friends.
So,
and both of these happened to me. So medical cannabis has facilitated managing many aspects of my condition over the past 8 years that I've been a patient. And I've been able to cut down on my medication intake to approximately 6 to 8. And my doctor visits have gone down from almost 7 a week to 1, and it's meant economic relief both to me and my insurance companies, including Medicare. So some of the things that are really important to look at in here is that the amounts that can be purchased are limited. So for folks that really need to use a great deal of the natural medicine, they're limited to what they can purchase each month, and it's tracked through a very complex computer system that has been difficult for the producers to get on board with. And in many cases, it's not covered by insurance, but it is deductible as a medical expense on your taxes. And it's really important for patients to understand dosing information. So it's extremely important that the dispensaries test their medication, and we only, I believe, have one lab right now in New Mexico.
Well, Nat, let me just jump in real quick and ask you, what's it been like getting your card renewed or keeping your prescription active?
This year I'm kind of lucky that it's not going to expire till December, so I'm probably going to start 3 months ahead of that to get my new card. My card was late two years ago. The difficulty is that because we're trying to always stay ahead of having our card be delayed in getting to us and becoming illegal and being criminalized for just utilizing a natural medicine that's illegal in our state, is our cards, we apply 3 months early. You may get it in 30 days, you may get it in 90 days, but if you get it in 30 days, you've just moved up your window by 2 months to 3 months.
No,
so
you don't lose any
bit
of time.
So you get less than a year, and it just is so difficult when your conditions are permanent.
That is incorrect,
ma'am. Your medical records show that, and then you cannot get the card for several years.
David,
patients and also the Drug Policy Alliance, which is a an advocacy group for a lot of things related to harm reduction and medical cannabis and naloxone treatment for overdose deaths and things to prevent overdose deaths. We've gone to the medical advisory board. We've asked them to change this. They've asked the Department of Health to change this as a medical board, and it's never been approved by the Department of Health. So ultimately, the decision lies with the Secretary of Health.
Right. Thanks for sharing that, Nat. And David, you're saying that actually you don't lose any time off your card.
No, you never lose any. No matter how early you apply, you won't lose any bit of time. If you apply 3 months early and get your card a month or 2 months before your card expires the year before, you'll have the same expiration date just with a year later. So you will never, ever lose any bit of time no matter how early you do apply. So you don't have to worry about applying too early, ma'am. You won't lose your year or any time.
One caveat to that, though, is like, for instance, my card was late this year. It took about 7 weeks instead of the five that it had been taking typically in the past. I didn't get my card until over a month after my card expired.
Me too.
But when I got my card, it still said March 4th. It didn't say, you know,
no, it's
April
enrollment
4th.
Date March 4th.
Yeah.
The expiration date will change, though, because mine's the same way. The enrollment date stayed the same, but the expiration date, you'll always have a year.
Well, you know, I mean, the theme here.
I didn't get a year this last time.
Then you should tell them because that's their mistake, and they'll fix it.
And the DOH by law has 60 days to get those cards renewed, and so they're
30, isn't it?
30 in the 30 in the statute.
It's 30.
60 days is what I was told recently.
That they're taking 60 days is what
they're actually is what I was told. I actually had a conversation just last night. With a very high-ranking DOH person who asked me not to give the name. But it was told to me that they're averaging about 45 days for the current card renewal or a new applicant to get their card. Their average is 45 days.
It's just the law stays 30. It's written in the law that they're supposed to have it to you within 30 days of accepting it.
Let me jump in here and say that, you know, we did want DOH to be a part of this show. We repeatedly requested a representative from the State Department of Health join us for this conversation. And they, in effect, refused to participate. And we say that because we left like 6 voicemails, 3 emails over a period of a week to Kenny Beheel, who's the public information officer there, and he didn't respond to any of our requests or even acknowledge that our requests had been received. So I'm sorry that we don't have that perspective to share. But, you know, the theme here is things at DOH are taking a long time. And State Auditor Tim Keller is with us in the studio now. Auditor Keller, thank you for joining us. But let's talk about this delay in turning around applications. Why is that a problem from your perspective in the State Auditor's Office?
Sure. Well, just came up in the discussion points out is that unfortunately there's a very bright line law in this case, and it is 30 days. And so it doesn't necessarily matter from a legal perspective whether they're 30 day or 45 days on average or 60 days. They're violating their own statute. And that law was set up on purpose because of how important this is and because of the issues that we just heard from the callers and that you've been speaking about in terms of, you know, in many ways, this is a severe health issue for individuals. And so if you're 15 days late, it actually matters. And then it matters to families. And then it can even matter to society and folks around individuals who need this treatment. So In our opinion, there's just no excuse. And the excuse that's given by the department is about money, which we see often from, you know, any kind of government or administration. But we actually researched that as well. And as auditor, we can, you know, see into their accounts and so forth. And there were a couple of things that were very disappointing. They reverted roughly $100,000 last year from the fund that's used to pay for processing these card applications. And so we really feel like, you know, there was no need for that, and that money obviously could have been used to hire more folks or contract more folks to process. Similarly, Senator McSorley, when he wrote this legislation and the subsequent fund that pays for it, the growers, of course, pay into a fund to process the applications. And that fund has excess cash in it, too. Some of it could be used for contracting or firm point for processing. So we really are pretty sure that this is not a financial issue. This has to do with either leadership, prioritization, or just competency. And so at the end of the day, because it's a public health issue and because the money is there, they really should just process them in 30 days and do what it takes to do that. And they have the money to do that.
I believe so, you're right when they writ the law specifically because it is important. Like I see now, like, because it's been a few months that this has been going on now, of getting patients who are actually, I mean, even calling and threatening me because I'm like the middle guy, you know, I'm the one helping them. So, you know, they come to me for help every time that they need something. So I'm even having patients get, because they don't have access to their medications, their symptoms are flaring, and they're actually, I'm even getting calls that they're threatening, like, I better get my car, you're ripping me off, like, what's going on? And I'm giving them the same line, I keep giving them, like, they're just overwhelmed, like, you told me that a month ago. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I'm so sorry, but this is what's going on, and so, yeah, it is important.
I just want to explain to the listeners that are not...
Eric Briones.
Thanks. That are not patients, the way this works. Recently, we were forced to use a seed-to-sale program called BioTrack. And every patient is put into that BioTrack system. And all of our inventory, all of every producer's inventory is put into that BioTrack system. A patient is allowed 270 units per purchase per 90-day period.
270 units.
And so they have units per flower, and they have unit equivalents for edibles and oils and all of the different types of medication. If that patient's card is expired, and we see this at the producer's end, right, where they're getting their medicine. If the patient's card is expired, we physically and legally cannot sell to them. Right. Legally, we can't sell to them because the card is expired. Physically, we can't sell to them because the BioTrack system tracks every transaction in real time, and it basically shuts that patient down. It doesn't basically shut them out. It shuts them out. Little. And so we see so many angry patients because we can't sell to them. And they sort of get that, but they don't want to really recognize that because they need their medication. And they're frustrated, like David says, and we get the brunt end of that.
Well, we have an email comment kind of along those lines from Brian, who says, you know, the problems with the state's program are an outrage. He wants the state to allow people to fill their prescriptions, even if their cards are expired, until the program at least can catch up with the applications and renewals that are on backlog. But looks like that's not a possibility.
It's illegal. Yeah. To make that transaction if they have an expired card. So the DOH several months ago said, listen, we are backlogged. Tell all your patients that you see, because we have to check them in and check their card on every transaction. If they're coming up 3 months out, tell them it's taking 2 months to get – 2 months ahead of time, apply for your new license. Yeah.
So I think the other challenge with this is that we have this sort of idea that folks – this wrong idea that criminalizes folks where it's sort of assumed that you can just go elsewhere to get the medicine. And, you know, elsewhere is sort of code even used by the department, which is, you know, essentially illegal channels. And I think obviously that's a problem because it's illegal, but it's also a problem because a lot of the types of medicine, so the oils and the tinctures and the salves and things like that, actually are not available in other areas. And there's a large portion of users of medical marijuana, and that is the format that works best for them. And so this is much more sort of a pharmaceutical dispensary issue that affects people's lives as opposed to, you know, oh, we can just go to the free market and get it. That's just not true.
Where the black market in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, but the problem with the black market is you don't know the quality. You don't know the condition. Anything. You don't know how it was grown. Anything. You don't know if it's got mold. There's a lot of problems that could potentially be very severe, especially for patients with compromised immune systems.
And if they're on this medication regime already and all of a sudden they can't take their medications anymore, imagine somebody on a pharmaceutical regime. I know that I have family members like my mother who used to take pharmaceuticals, and if one day she wouldn't take them, her symptoms would start coming back to almost to deadly symptoms. So it's the same thing with medical cannabis. They're on a regime, they can't take it anymore. They're just going to get sick, and the potentials could be deadly.
You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show live from the University of New Mexico. We're talking about medical marijuana and the Department of Health's problems getting its program into compliance with state law. We want to hear from you. Have you had your application delayed? Maybe your experience with the program has been smooth sailing. Either way, tell us about it. 277-KUNM, that's 277-5866 locally in Albuquerque. Toll free, 877-899-5866. Send us an email to callinshow@KUNM.org or tweet at KUNM News. You can use the hashtag HealthNM. We're going to take a short break and then we'll be right back.
If KUNM strikes a special chord with you, donate that old accord to keep the tunes coming. Turn your Beatle into the Beatles. Turn your Altima into the ultimate in great music. Have a Buick Century from the last century donated to us in this century. We accept just about anything with wheels and an engine. Find out if your car qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. It takes just a few minutes. That's 888-KUNM-CAR or 888-586-6227.
Support comes from El Rancho de las Golondrinas, 23rd Annual Santa Fe Wine Festival, July 2nd and 3rd. Sample wines from 20 New Mexico wineries, live music, food, and crafts. Info on shuttle service and more at golondrinas.org.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams, reporter for Public Health New Mexico, a KUNM news desk that gives deep-dive reporting of public health and poverty here in the land of enchantment. We're talking about the ins and outs of New Mexico's medical marijuana program, and we want to hear your thoughts on the topic. Do you think the state's equipped to regulate this growing industry in the future? Do we need to change the way we're thinking about it? Give us a ring at 277-5866 in Albuquerque. 877-899-5866 is toll-free number. You can also send us an email at callinshow@KUNM.org. Or post comments to our Facebook page. And we have a full line of phone calls coming in, so let's go to some of those. Susan is on the line with us from Bernalillo. Hi, Susan. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Go right
How
ahead.
How are you today?
Doing well, thanks.
So I have issues with this program, complete issues, because, one, there's just not enough medication out there. You guys limit our ability to get medicine. You limit the plant count so that these producers can't provide us with enough medicine.
Well, Susan, you're saying you have lots of
my husband suffered from cancer, and it took, the department did get his card out to him within 2 weeks, but this was in 2015.
Right.
And, but then we were trying to get medicine, and the dispensaries would be out because they didn't have enough, they couldn't produce it fast enough. This is a grown product. Mm-hmm. And then you guys put regulations on the concentrates, the percentage that we could use on concentrates. They lowered that, and that's ridiculous. You're messing with medicine. You're messing with people's lives.
Right.
And
so
the Lynn and Aaron Compassionate Act says that we have 90 days of uninterrupted supply to every patient.
Well, thanks for sharing that frustration, Susan. I know I've heard from some other producers in the field that there is a little bit of frustration around the amount of plants that they can grow. I don't know if you guys have shared some of that as well. But Carrie is on the line with us from Albuquerque as well, calling in with a question about the plant count. So let's stay on that topic. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I'm really, really concerned because if the patient count keeps going up, and for those of us who, need this on a daily basis just to be able to function, I've been into some of the dispensaries and they do run out, or they don't have what we need, or when they do have it, it goes really quickly. So I know other states do have, I guess, an unlimited count. And so I'm just wondering what the state going to do about that. I mean, are they just going to let us run out of the medication, or, I mean, what's happening there?
Well, Eric, have you had an experience with that at your business, Minerva Canada?
Oh, yeah. We've been wrestling with that issue for years now. As you know, Carrie, we recently got an increase in plant count to 450 off of 150. So the producers that chose to do that increase get to pay $90,000 a year, which is the second highest renewal fee in the entire country, to grow 450 plants. In Colorado, you can grow unlimited plants. You can grow literally 10 million plants, and I think it's $13,000. So our scale is off. And so the Department of Health made this plant count increase thinking that they were going to be able, and this has always been one of our concerns, so that we can lower the price of our medicine. But when you triple the price of our renewal fee and we get to triple the number of plants we grow, we haven't really saved any money for the patients.
And this isn't a new issue, is it? I think I remember a DOH report from like 2013 or something about amount of cannabis on hand wasn't enough to meet demand, and that was 3 years ago, and now we're having a surge in patients.
So then last year, they approved 12 new producers. Of those 12 new producers, they're in various states of being ready. So a couple of them are actually selling cannabis. A couple of them are still looking for facilities. Some of them are just starting their grow. Some of them are building out their grow. They're at all different levels of where they need to be starting to be able to provide more medicine out into the public. So the problem is going to be continuous. It is going to be slightly reduced when all these producers come online and start actually producing medicine. But then as the patient count continues to grow, we're going to be put back into that corner of a lot of patients and not enough medicine.
Well,
Tim Keller.
The irony of your $90,000 fee is that is exactly what goes to staffing, processing the cards.
Oh, I know. And then multiply 90,000 times 35 producers. There's a lot of money there.
Right. So I think, you know, I would just add that at the end of the day, it would be the most helpful to have a proactive administration at DOH and in general on the fourth floor that just says, we want to make this program work. And they should be suggesting and proposing changes each year to make the program work better. And the framework of the legislation is set up to allow for that. So, I mean, it really just takes a commitment for the program to work.
And we would have loved to have DOH here on the program to share their side of the story, but they didn't respond to our many, many voicemails, emails, and clearly did not want to be part of the program. There's an email question coming your way, Auditor Keller, from Jason Barker of the LECUA Patient Coalition of New Mexico, and he wants to know how we can be sure that the producer expansion applications are handled fairly, given that the state employees have been involved with nonprofits and not disclosed this. Do you know anything about that issue?
You know, it hasn't been part of our initial fact finding. That would definitely be something we'd be happy to look into. And so if there are specific pieces of information, I would encourage the caller just to reach out to our office and we can check on the details. But I know the press actually in the media has done a lot of work trying to sort of shine a light on and bring some transparency to these applications. And I think that's a good thing for the state. That level of sunshine is always good. But with respect to, you know, the quality of background checks and so forth that they're doing for the applications, you know, that's something actually that doesn't routinely show up in an audit, unfortunately. I think the program should be annually reviewed, and it is something that the legislature could request as well. So that's another avenue that might be helpful. And, you know, I think the last thing that I would just say on that is that folks all across the program, we've seen even the auditing of marijuana providers seems to not be effective. And so there's just a lot of challenges in this program. And that's why, you know, we really think folks should come together and proactively try and fix the issues instead of sort of, you know, pointing fingers and making excuses and that sort of thing.
Now, advisory board meetings, they are public, and the more people that do attend, I think it makes a significant difference on the outcome of the decisions, or maybe holds a lot of sway with the board.
Right. Well, let's go back to the phone lines. We have a lot of people wanting to weigh in on this conversation. Marcus is one of them on the phone with us from Albuquerque and has a comment on comparing the program to California's medical pot program. Medical cannabis program, I'm sorry, slipping into a... Go ahead,
yes.
Marcus.
Yes. Well, Ed, first of all, I want to thank you for this program. Ed Williams and Auditor Keller and the whole panel has done a great job today. I've learned a lot about New Mexico. I'm not from New Mexico. I'm a physician in California, so I have a different perspective on that. First of all, there is the literature in medicine now has shown that the discussion is really over, that medical marijuana isn't effective and should be a respected medication. California has a medical marijuana program. Colorado has a recreational program. I'm in favor of the medical program because I think in the long run it's going to guarantee the quality and dosage of the medication. But it sounds to me like, from what I've heard, that the Department of Health is having a bit of a is dragging their feet.
Marcus, has this been an issue in California where you're from? Has the Department of Health or whoever is regulating the program there run into the same kind of hurdles, or is it smoother?
No, it's totally smooth. All those wrinkles can be worked out. It's a simple matter of using, you know, our communication technology, and the computer and the growers are and everyone is well coordinated there.
Thanks.
There's ample supply, the quality is guaranteed, and you don't have to wait.
Right. Well, thanks for your call, Marcus. We need to move on so we can get everybody on the air. But Brian on the line with us as well from Albuquerque. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Some problems with your phone line. Can you... Yeah, we're going to have to come back to you, Brian, because we can't quite hear. Maybe you can call back and get on the line. Let's go to Larry from Santa Fe with a comment about his car. Did you just apply for your car, Larry, or and how'd that go for you?
I'm patient number 343. I've been in the program a long time. My renewal, however, had expired for 27 days. I finally got my card yesterday, and they did extend the date from the time that I lost, so you don't have to worry about that. However, Kenny Vigil, the spokesperson for the Department of Health, made a statement that was just despicable when he was asked in a news article about what's happening at the DOH. He says, "We're backlogged, but you should go back to your doctor and ask them for some alternative medicine," which I thought was outrageous for the Department of Health to say that to anybody.
You know, Tim Keller, what happens to people who are caught in the middle right now? You might straighten all this out with a special audit that you've said you will be launching, right, if this doesn't get fixed soon. People that, like Larry or others who are going without their medication, are they going to have any reparations or are they just high and dry until this works out? Bureaucratic processes, even a special audit, I'm sure, can take a while.
Sure. What we're hoping for is the administration just to say and do what I think is very simple, which is just saying, yes, we're overwhelmed. We have a backlog. We are going to clear it by, you know, August 30th and do what it takes to do that. If they need to request more money from the Department of Finance, fine. So we're really asking essentially for a corrective action plan on when that backlog is going to be cleared. And that's pretty straightforward. And I think we do this a lot with agencies for all sorts of processing. And most of the time, they actually just come back and they take ownership of the problem. And they say, we do not want you auditing and doing a special audit and this and that. And they just get the job done. So we have given the Department of Health a window of time to come up with that and to report back to us. And so hopefully that will do the job. Now, there's some other tools we can use, like a special audit. But I think what really is going to happen, which is unfortunate, but they're setting themselves up for a lot of legal action, you know, because at the end of the day, it's pretty clear they're breaking the law. And this is a straightforward sort of class action track. And so, you know, as somebody who that's going to cost the state ultimately more in the long run. So we would always prefer them just to admit the problem, correct it as fast as they can, and then we can move on. But I think if it really goes on much further, folks, especially with a medical need, a terminal situation, to me, you know, this is obvious fertile ground for a lawsuit.
Now, the health department has is moving into a larger building. They've hired like two, I think, permanent workers, a couple temp workers to try to process this faster and help people get their cards turned around within the legal time frame. I mean, you think that's going to be enough?
Well, we're going to monitor it, and we hope so. And that's why we're hoping that by at some point, at least in July, maybe the end of July, they will come back and say, OK, we have enough people. We have enough resources, because it is a formulaic solution in a sense that you just, you know, add in the man hours it takes to process it and the amount of, you know, computer time or whatever days in the week. And you can actually forecast, hey, when we're going to get through the backlog. So hopefully these new changes will do it.
Let's go to one more phone call if we can really quickly. Joseph in Albuquerque, and then I'll get back to you. Right?
Yes, hello. I'd like to comment that there's a huge disconnect between federal law and the various state laws. And there's been several court cases up in Colorado already where even private employers who have rules against marijuana usage can fire employees who are even using and have medical marijuana prescriptions. Of course, federal law, anyone who has a security clearance or a job working for a federal organization can lose their job or their security clearance. And, you know, it shows positive in a urine test for days, sometimes weeks after usage. And so there's this huge class of our population that can't take advantage of medical marijuana at all. Or they'll risk losing their jobs and or their security clearances.
Thanks for adding that to the conversation, Joseph. Eric, you had something to say a minute ago. I cut you off. I'm sorry.
That's fine. The DOH has hired seven temporary employees to help with this backlog, right? And they're moving things along as quickly as they can. They also hired a number of permanent employees at both now, and then they split what they do. So Ken Groggle handles the producers and the producer side of the program, and then Andrea Salzberg, something, I can't remember her name. She handles the patient side of the program, and now they're actively looking for a director to oversee both entities of the program, which hopefully will smooth things out and make some of these problems go away. But you know, I have a good relationship with the DOH. When I go and I visit with these people, they're as busy as they can be. When I sit down and talk to Andrea, she's got two stacks of paper. They're 20 inches tall on each side of her desk.
Yeah,
and
sure.
They're just overwhelmed. And yes, they need some people. They need to get it straightened out. There's no doubt. But I think they're trying to do as best as they can. And once they get truly a program director, I think a lot of these programs will a lot of these problems will go away.
Let's hope so. And let's try to squeeze one more email really quickly in because we're almost out of time. But we have an email question asking, are these problems with the system just because government employees have not gotten over their lack of support of marijuana as a medicine that people in New Mexico have a right to? And in addition, Sherry, the grower we heard from earlier, says she's had issues just getting people to call her back. Any thoughts on that really quickly?
Well, I was just going to comment, like, add to his. I'm up there at least once a week, every week at the Department of Health, and they're wonderful. They're positive for the program. They're working their butts off. They're pro-cannabis, so it's not like they're against it or anything like that. So they're wonderful people, and I just think they're just really overwhelmed with the amount of people that have been coming in, and that's it.
Great. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time, but we do want to thank all of our guests. Joel White was with us. State Auditor Tim Keller, thank you for joining us. David Valdez of New Mexico Brief Relief and Eric Briones of Minerva Canna Group, thank you all for being here. If you want to share this program with your friends or hear it again, you can find it online at KUNM.org along with all of our other call-in shows. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Jefferson White engineers the show. Kaveh Movahead manages our phones. Anna Landy live tweeted the show today, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Kanama Health Foundation. You can find out more online at publichealthnm.org. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening.